Matthias said excitedly. "I think you've hit the nail on the head. Do you think that our bad-tempered captive might know something about the rumor?"
Methuselah grinned mischievously.
"Lend me your dagger. I have a simple experiment that I wish to try on our prisoner. Come on."
Matthias escorted his friend to where the basket lay by the abbey walls. There was no sound from within. Methuselah tapped the basket sharply with the blade of the dagger. Warbeek had been caught napping. She came to life in an irate mood.
"Worms! All worms, you old mouse-worm! Stay away, Warbeek, killy!"
Methuselah tried his level best to act tough.
"Be silent, you little baggage, or I'll spike you on this dagger, and your king too, if he dares to come down."
In a fury, Warbeek smashed her small body against the sides of the basket, causing the old mouse to take a step back.
"Ah, go on, you killy Warbeek with dagger. Wait, see, you not get King Bull Sparrow with little worm knife. King have a big sword. Chop all mouses up. Killy pretty quick, you betcha."
Methuselah laughed with delight.
"You see? The Sparrow King owns a big sword."
Matthias did a cartwheel. He whooped with joy.
"Methuselah, you're a magician, an ancient wizard."
The old mouse shook his head modestly.
"Oh, dear me, no. I like to think of myself as an aged but extremely erudite scholar."
Chapter 12. Sitting comfortably, propped up on pillows, Clooney sipped a beaker of barley wine as he listened to the improbable tales spun by Sella and Fangburn. They both fidgeted nervously during the course of their deceitful narrative, trying desperately not to contradict one another, while at the same time avoiding the cold, impassive eye of the warlord.
It was like this, Chief, Fangburn stammered. "Me and old Redtooth were keeping our eyes on the fox here, when suddenly Redtooth hears a noise in the woods, so off he goes to investigate."
"Where was the noise coming from?" snapped Clooney.
The deceivers spoke together.
"North,"
said Sella.
"West,"
said Fangburn, simultaneously.
It was sort of northwest," Sella gulped, realizing how foolish she sounded.
Knowing that Clooney was smarter than either of them, she wished she didn't have this big dumb rat to corroborate the story.
"So Redtooth went off to see what the noise was,"
Sella faltered.
"We told him not to go, sir, but he insisted."
Clooney watched Sella's legs shaking.
"Go on. What happened then?" he murmured.
Fangburn took up the tale again.
"Well, you see, Chief, he was gone an awful long time. We both called out to him, but there was no answer."
"So we both went to look for him," said Sella.
Clooney toyed with the beaker, his eyes bored into the fox.
"We searched and searched, sir," Sella mumbled, "but all we could find was this big stretch of marshland and bog,
which poor old Redtooth had wandered into and been sucked down, never to be seen again,"
Clooney supplemented. Sella kept wishing the floor would open up and swallow her. Fangburn sobbed brokenly.
"Our poor friend Redtooth, gone forever."
"Yes, our poor friend Redtooth,"
Clooney agreed sympathetically. Suddenly his voice hardened as he shot a question at Fangburn.
"You, how did your face get knocked about, and where did you get those long scratches from?"
Sella jumped in hastily.
He walked into a big thorn tree, didn't you, Fangburn?"
"What? Oh, yes. I was dashing about, and I didn't see it, Chief. The fox can tell you. She saw it, and if she didn't, well, I already told her,"
said Fangburn, his voice trailing off miserably. Clooney laughed mirthlessly, his fangs showing yellow and sharp.
"So, You walked into a big thorn tree and got two black eyes, a torn ear, and your whole hide covered in long scratches?
Fangburn stared at the floor. He had to swallow twice before he could answer, his voice subdued.
That's what happened, Chief.
Clooney's tone was laden with sarcasm.
And then, I suppose, the three little pigs with wings flew down and gave you a toffee apple each?
Yes. What was that, Chief? Ouch!
Fangburn hopped on one leg as Seller kicked his ankle to silence him.
You fox, Clooney snarled. Where's the special herb you went to search for?
Seller was completely nonplussed.
Special herb, I...
Clooney hurled the beaker. It bounced off Fangburn's nose, splashing barley wine over them both.
Get out! Out of my sight before I have you tortured and roasted!
Clooney roared at the unlucky pair. There was an undignified scramble. The door slammed shut behind the conspirators. Clooney lay back and smirked. Everything was going according to plan. He had lost Red Tooth, but what the devil? Red Tooth had been an ambitious rat. Clooney only admired ambition in one rodent. Himself. Far off in Mossflower Wood, the night breezes stirred the treetops gently. The moon rode in a cloudless sky. Its pale light filtered through the waving foliage to create the beautiful but strange effect of a shimmering, swaying carpet on the woodland floor.
Asmodeus! Asmodeus!
The covering of dead moonlit vegetation on the ground trembled and rustled. What better cover than a light breeze and a hunter's moon? Glittering black eyes searched the night, a forked tongue tasted the air. The small living plants appeared to shudder as the long, scaly body brushed by them, trailing its way along.
Asmodeus! Asmodeus!
Softly rustling, deceptive as the speckled shadows, the huge adder roamed his domain. Patience and stealth were acquired by long experience. Sometimes the serpent would lie totally inert, awaiting the unsuspecting paw that trod too close. Other times, it would raise itself, uncoiling to look into bushes for eggs and birds on the nest. Some nights it was lean hunting. Many creatures sensed the approach of the slithering evil, or scented its dry, musty, death-like odor. The snake had often gone hungry at times like these, but patience and stealth, a lesson soon learned is a meal soon earned. At the foot of the sycamore, the adder stretched itself along the still form of Red Tooth. Well, an unexpected bonus. This was another rat that could not scurry off. No expenditure of venom or hypnosis needed. How fortunate. The huge reptile coiled itself languorously around the dead rodent.
Asmodeus. Asmodeus.
No need of burial parties. Nature and the woodlands took care of their own funeral arrangements. There was but one efficient undertaker. The adder's jaws opened in something resembling the nightmare of a smile. The pathway to eternity was open. Chapter 13. Matthias was excused from duties at the gatehouse fortifications. The council had agreed that both he and Methuselah, plus any creature that chose to help them, were to be left to their own devices. The majority of the Red Wall mice thought that Matthias was acting a little oddly, but the young mouse knew exactly what he was about. he strolled slowly through the abbey grounds. Behind him hopped Warbeak, on a lead with a collar about her neck. On the sparrow's uninjured leg, Matthias had tied a brick. Not a very big brick, but one large enough to stop the bird getting airborne or trying any sneak attacks upon its captor. Thoroughly disgruntled, the sparrow hopped along like a feathered convict with a ball and chain, forced to follow the young mouse wherever he chose to wander. At first, Warbeak had raved and threatened. Death was too good for Matthias. Warbeak was going to kill him twice, then cut him up and drop him from the top of a high tree for the worms to feed upon. Matthias had merely tugged the lead sharply and quickened his pace. When the savage young sparrow showed signs of good behavior, Matthias would feed her morsels of candied chestnut. The treatment was working. Outside the gatehouse, Matthias rested. He fed the sparrow some more of the candied nut. "There now, you good bird. Well done," he said approvingly. Warbeak scowled fiercely, but she munched the nut readily. Methuselah popped his head out briefly and beckoned.
"Come into the study, Matthias. Oh, and bring that little horror too."
In the cluttered study, the old mouse produced a yellowed volume.
"Our old friend Sister Germaine's translation of the original Redwall Abbey blueprints. I think I've found what we are looking for in the main diagram. See?"
Matthias studied the blueprint carefully.
"Brilliant!" he exclaimed. "You've done it again, my friend. A route to the abbey roof from the inside."
Methuselah breathed upon his glasses, polishing them on his fur.
"Really, it's thanks to Sister Germaine for keeping such fastidious records, young mouse. Now, here's where you'll start."
An hour later, Matthias left the gatehouse with Warbeak bobbing behind. As they went, the young mouse muttered to himself,
"I'll need 5 or 6 strong climbing ropes, some spikes, oh, and a hammer. Must have a hammer. Now let's see. A good haversack to carry it all, enough food and drink, ah, and some candied chestnuts for you, my friend."
Warbeak uttered a stream of curses as she stumbled on the brick. Matthias waited as she picked herself up.
"Tut, tut, such language for a young sparrow."
Constance and Ambrose Spike watched the odd pair pass by. The badger tapped the side of her head with a paw.
"Bats in the belfry."
"Or sparrows," giggled the hedgehog.
Basil Staghare superintended the willing creatures who carried logs and filling to shore up the gatehouse entrance. The hare had brought a touch of military efficiency to bear upon the exercise. He had formed the volunteers into a living chain which constantly passed the defense materials along. Basil brought his good-natured authority into play.
"You there! Forth from the end, chappy! Liven your ideas up, laddie-buck! That's the third time you've spilled a basket of soil. Here, let me show you how."
The timid mice smiled among themselves. The blustering hare was quite a kindly creature, really, all bark and no bite at all. He shared the tasks with them, working as hard as anyone.
"No, no, brother, what's your name? You pass logs along like this. Look, you go and get a bite to eat. Come on, the rest of you beautiful dreamers. Stir your stumps or I'll have your whiskers for bootlaces."
The helpers laughed and did the best they could. Now and again, there would be barely stifled giggles as they watched the performance of Silent Sam. He stood behind Basil, pantomiming the hare's every movement, puffing up his tiny chest and strutting about importantly. In the abbey kitchens, Cornflower carefully wrapped Matthias's food in fresh dock leaves. Matthias sidled up, helping himself to a candied chestnut. Cornflower wrapped his paw with a wooden ladle.
"Those nuts are for that poor little sparrow. Leave them alone, you great glutton," she scolded.
Matthias snorted indignantly.
"Poor little sparrow, my eye. Listen, miss, if I let that young hussy off her lead for 5 minutes, we'd all be murdered in our beds."
The young field mouse helped Matthias with the haversack straps. She tried not to let her concern for him show.
"Matthias, I know you won't tell me where you're going,
But wherever it is, please take care of yourself.
Matthias adjusted the dagger in the black sword belt. He stood framed in the doorway, smiling confidently.
Don't worry, Cornflower. I fully intend to take care of myself for the safety of Redwall Abbey. And for you.
A moment later, he was gone. Halfway along the top dormitory passage, Matthias halted. A stepladder was set up underneath a wooden loft door in the ceiling. Methuselah came along, leading Warbeak. The sparrow was still wearing the collar, lead, and brick shackle. Matthias looked up to the door.
So, that's where we're going, eh?
The old gatehouse keeper gave him a neatly drawn map.
You'll find it all marked down there, Matthias. That door leads to a loft. Turn to your right and keep walking until you touch the wall. To your right, you will find a gap in the wall. On the other side of that gap, you will come out about halfway up the wall of Great Hall. It is a ledge between the arches of the sandstone columns. From there, you must climb up to a higher row of ledges alongside the stained glass windows. Scale the rib in the center of the first window to the left. You will find yourself on a wooden ridge that runs along parallel to the curve of the roof. Further along that ridge, there is another wooden loft door. I'm sorry, but I cannot locate it exactly. You must find it yourself. When you do, go through it, and you should be directly underneath the top roof attic. From there on, you are on your own. I cannot help you, Matthias.
The ancient mouse placed his paws on his young friend's shoulders. His voice trembled as he bade goodbye.
Good fortune go with you, Matthias. I wish that I were young and agile once again so that I could accompany you.
Methuselah embraced the young mouse as if he were his own son, and as Matthias ascended the ladder, the old mouse called out final instructions to him.
If that sparrow causes you any trouble, don't hesitate to kick her off into thin air. She'll come down as fast as the brick she's tied to.
Warbeak scowled, but made no comment. She knew Methuselah spoke the truth. The brick was like an anchor against her leg. Matthias gave the loft door a strong shove upwards and slid it to one side. He covered his eyes and coughed as the dust of ages poured down upon his head. Tugging the sparrow behind him, he climbed into the loft. It was very dark and gloomy. Matthias peered over to his right. Faintly he could make out a strip of wan, greyish light filtering in.
Him be gap in wall, like old worm mouse say about,
Warbeak chimed.
Hey, keep a civil tongue in your head, sparrow. That's my friend you're talking about, gritted Matthias as he strode off to the right, tugging the lead.
His concentration broken, he stepped awkwardly upon a joist and tripped heavily into the thick dust. Warbeak was upon the young mouse in a flash. The sparrow scratched hard at Matthias's neck and pecked at the back of his head, forcing it down to the floor. Matthias felt the suffocating dust clog his mouth as he struggled to turn his body over. Warbeak pecked and scratched frantically, her target obscured by the bulky haversack. Reaching up behind himself, the mouse felt around until he grasped the sparrow's leg. Giving it a hard pull, he rolled over, plucking out his dagger in the same movement. Matthias lay across Warbeak, pinning her to the floor, the point of his dagger pricking the sparrow's throat.
Listen, Warbeak, Matthias panted. One more move like that, and it'll be your last. Do you hear me?
Both creatures lay still a while, their faces close together, breathing heavily. The sparrow was still defiant.
I get chance, Warbeak killy mouse. Sparrow not give up, you see?
Matthias sprang to his feet, tugging the lead viciously. He dragged the sparrow, stumbling and tripping to the crack of light. Swinging the bird forwards, Matthias pushed her through the narrow aperture, squeezing through after her with great difficulty. They were on the first ledge, high above Great Hall. Without warning, Matthias shoved Warbeak roughly off the ledge.
The startled sparrow shot downwards and stopped with a jerk, only thick neck feathers saving her from strangulation. Matthias held the lee tightly with both paws, straining backwards as the sparrow dangled and fluttered over Great Hall.
"Now, you promise to behave yourself, or down you go, my friend," Matthias shouted.
With her heart hammering at the surprise attack and her predicament, Warbeak realized that she was completely at the mercy of her captor. Burdened with the brick, she had no chance of flying. As she hung, flapping uselessly, Matthias called down,
"Make up your mind. My paws are getting tired. This lead's beginning to slip."
A forlorn little voice answered,
"Warbeak not wanna die? Mouse win, pull sparrow up, be good, give word."
Bracing himself against a stone arch, Matthias pulled the sparrow back to safety. Together they sat on the ledge sharing a canteen of water, both weary and dusty. Matthias was still wary of his prisoner.
"How good is the word of a sparrow?" he asked.
Warbeak puffed out her chest.
"Sparrow word always good. Warbeak no say lie. Me swear by mother's egg, that big swear."
Matthias reflected that he had used desperate measures to secure a promise, but with justification. He was being uncompromising with himself as well as his captive. No more could he afford to be the silly little novice that had bumbled about the abbey before the start of the present troubles. He was maturing, learning the warrior's way. This mission was vital. Redwall depended upon him, just as it had once depended upon Martin the warrior. Warbeak cocked her head quizzically to one side.
"What Matthias think about?"
The young mouse repacked the water canteen into his haversack.
"Oh, nothing much, Warbeak. Come on, we'd better get on."
With an odd feeling, Matthias realized that he and Warbeak were now on first-name terms. Clooney might be making promotions. There were now three rat officers on the list of the dead. First it had been Skullface, killed beneath the wheels of the cart. Next to go was Ragear. There was talk of a serpent. He was never seen again. Now Redtooth, Clooney's first officer, was missing, presumed dead. Most of Clooney's army had an eye to promotion, not only for prestige. There were the extra shares of loot to be considered. Kilconey the Ferret extolled the virtues of his weasel friend Scrag, who had met his death at the foot of the big elm tree.
"Oi, let me tell you, buckles, Scrag, now there was a weasel with a head on his shoulders. Officer material he was, definitely. Do you know, I still can't figure out how a smart boyo like that could let himself be killed in a fall from some old tree."
Cheese Thief sneered.
"Clumsiness, I'd say. I was there and saw it all. Besides, Clooney wouldn't have a weasel officer ordering rats about."
"And why not?" challenged the Ferret. "I'll wager the chief would promote any creature that showed good sense and a fighting spirit. Will you look at me now? I'm a fine figure of a ferret. Why, if I was the chief, I'd make me a captain just like that."
The Ferret snapped his claws. Cheese Thief spat upon the ground in contempt of Kilconey, knowing there was not much chance of promotion for himself. He was only rated as a minor sort of officer. If it came to a decision, Darkclaw was the natural choice. Fangburn had fallen from favor since the incident with Sella and Redtooth. Nevertheless, the weasels and their brethren the stoats and ferrets argued their case hotly. Why shouldn't others be promoted? What was so superior about rats? Mingifer, Scumnose, and Frogblood considered rats to be the elite of Clooney's horde. Darkclaw sided with them, while trying to placate the others, attempting to keep a foot in either camp should it come to a vote. One never knew. Little chance there was of anything democratic being allowed by Clooney the Scourge, who lay on the bed with his eye closed, ignoring the whispered bickering and backbiting around him. He would promote only when he was good and ready. Meanwhile, just let any of his horde dare try to press the issue. Sella and her son skulked in a corner. They felt trapped. Nobody had spoken to them since the demise of Red Tooth. It was as if they were being blamed. Suddenly Clooney called over to Sella.
"Hey, Fox, take that brat of yours outside for a bit. Get some fresh air, and remember, no wandering off. Send Darkclaw in here to me, and that Gabby Ferret, what's his name, Kilconi."
The foxes hastened to do as they were told, glad to be out of the oppressive atmosphere of the sick room. Darkclaw and the ferret came marching in, not knowing whether to be confident or apprehensive. You never knew with Clooney. They both saluted.
"Chief."
Clooney got out of bed. He paced back and forth, testing his legs. Each day they were a bit stronger. He walked past the pair and spoke without turning to face them.
"Who knows anything about tunneling?"
Kilconi stepped smartly forward.
"Oh, the tunnels, Your Honor. You're talking to the very creature."
Clooney rested upon his standard.
"You?"
"Who else but myself, sir?" the ferret wheedled. "And don't I know some grand old animals that could help? Ferrets like me, stoats and weasels, why, sure, we're as good as any mole when it comes to the tunneling, so we're shoring and banking sinking shafts and gullies."
Clooney banged the standard against the floor.
"Enough. Where are these others that you mentioned?"
Kilconi cocked a claw over his shoulder.
"Sure, they're all outside, Your Worship. Shall I go and fetch them?"
"Go, and don't be all day about it," Clooney replied.
Kilconi threw a fancy salute and departed. Clooney pulled Darkclaw close to him. He spoke confidently.
"Don't you know anything about tunnels, Darkclaw?"
The rat shook his head unhappily. Clooney put his claw around Darkclaw's shoulder.
"Well, never mind. I've got other work for you. We can't let ferrets, stoats, and weasels take all the glory, can we? You've always been a good, solid rat, Darkclaw. You help me, and I'll see that you get a rich reward when the time comes."
Darkclaw nodded obediently. Some time later, Clooney was deep in conference with Kilconi and his squad. It was interrupted by a scuffle and commotion from outside. Cheese Thief strode in, dragging Chicken Hound and prodding Seller ahead of him with a spear.
"What's going on here?"
Clooney demanded. Cheese Thief smirked triumphantly.
"It's these two foxes, Chief. I caught them with their ears against the door. They were listening in."
He skillfully tripped Seller and Chicken Hound with the spear butt. They fell in a heap at Clooney's feet, where they lay shivering and protesting their innocence.
"Not us, sir. We weren't eavesdropping. We were just leaning there for a rest. We're only simple healers."
Clooney nodded understandingly.
"I see. You just wanted to help with the digging, is that it?"
Eager to please and panic-stricken, Chicken Hound blurted out,
"Yes, that's it, sir. Give us a chance and we'll tunnel with the best of them."
Sella groaned despairingly as Clooney kicked her son viciously.
"Who said anything about tunneling, Fox? I only mentioned digging."
Sella attempted to save the situation.
"Please, sir, take no notice of the young fool. All he meant was that when you said dig..."
A whack from the banner staff silenced Sella. Clooney's voice was icy with condemnation.
"Traitors. All that he meant was that you slipped up when you copied my plans for an attack with a battering ram. So, now you know that I intend to tunnel into Red Wall."
Sella licked dry lips. She stared pleadingly at the warlord. There was no mercy in the single eye.
You know too much, Vixen. You and your son played a dangerous game. Nobody outsmarts Clooney. I've won, and you have both lost.
The foxes clasped their claws. They knelt whimpering pitifully. Clooney stood over them, enjoying his power as judge. He signaled to Cheese Thief and Darkclaw.
Take these miserable turncoats out of my sight. You know what to do.
Shrieking and screaming for mercy, the foxes were dragged away. Clooney turned back to the ferrets, weasels, and stoats.
Now, about this tunnel.
Chapter 14. Matthias and Warbeak had made slow progress. The climb up to the arches and stained glass windows was long and arduous. Matthias had relieved the sparrow of her brick hobble, pinioning her wings, make the going easier. At intervals, the young mouse drove spikes into the joints of the stone. He was careful not to look down. It was a terrifyingly impressive distance down to the abbey floor. Only once did he risk a quick glance, not certain if the dark spot on the ground might be Methuselah watching them. There was real peril negotiating the curve at the top of the arch. Hanging tightly to the spikes that he had fixed, Matthias leaned out dangerously. There was nothing but determination and the strength in his paws to stop him from plunging down to a frightening death. Gritting his teeth, he made it to the apex of the arch. He reached over the stone ledge which divided the arch from the stained glass windows above, and taking a firm grip, propelled himself upwards and sideways. His legs landed further along the ledge. With his cheek resting on the stone, he gave one last heave and rolled onto the safety of the ledge. Sitting up, Matthias knotted two ropes together. He lowered them to Warbeak, who was waiting below at the base of the arch. The sparrow looped the rope about herself. As she climbed, she aided Matthias by finding claw holds and making use of the spikes. Leaning back against the stained glass windows, they ate lunch. Warbeak gave a twittering laugh.
Matthias, all red mouse.
Oh, you should talk, Warbeak, Matthias replied. Look at yourself. You're blue all over.
The bizarre effect was created by sunlight shining through the stained glass. As they ate, Warbeak would dodge her head from side to side, changing color as she did so.
Look it. Now me green, blue again, now red like a Matthias mouse.
If you don't sit still, you'll be white with fright because you'll fall,
Matthias warned. When they were sufficiently recovered to start again, Matthias tried the sandstone center rib of the window. It was carved into a profusion of curlicues and niches, which made the climb considerably easier. Soon they reached the wooden ridge at the bottom of the roof curvature. It was perilously narrow. Together they edged along it, their backs bent unsafely forward with the curve of the ceiling behind. Neither of them was aware of the inquisitive beaked face of a sparrow who watched them from the corner of a stained glass window. It noted the would-be intruders, then flew off. Matthias drew his dagger. He stuck it into the wooden ceiling to steady himself as they halted to look for the next loft door.
I can see it, said Matthias. There, along to your left. You'll have to lead, Warbeak.
Gingerly, the sparrow slid her claws along the smooth wooden ridge. Suddenly, Matthias felt the dagger come free from the wood. He lost his grip and leaned outwards, teetering and waving his paws. Warbeak stopped him falling by pulling him back. The dagger went spinning down. It was a considerable time before they heard the faint clatter as it hit the abbey floor.
Gosh, said Matthias in an awed voice. I thought I'd had it then. I was certain I'd fall. Thanks for saving me, Warbeak.
Gradually they inched their way along until they arrived beneath the loft door.
It was too high and difficult for either of them to reach. Matthias made several attempts before he had to admit defeat. He sat upon the ridge, kicking his legs and feeling quite angry with himself. Failure stared him in the face.
A fool, that's what I am, a little fool, climbing all this way to be beaten by an old loft door.
The sparrow tapped him with her claw.
Why not Matthias cut Warbeak free? Then fly with sparrow wings and open little worm door.
Matthias looked blank.
Beg pardon?
Warbeak explained again.
You no listen. Warbeak say, cut wings free, fly up and open door.
Give me your sparrow's word that you won't fly off.
Is good. Give sparrow word. Promise no scape.
Swear by your mother's egg.
By mother's egg, Warbeak swear.
Matthias undid the twine that pinioned the sparrow's wings, and Warbeak flapped her wings experimentally.
Long time no fly. Me good, you see.
The young sparrow launched herself off the ridge. She went into a series of zooming circles and performed a few acrobatic turns for her companion's benefit. Matthias grinned.
Right-o, I'm impressed. Now, get back here, you little show-off, and open this door.
Warbeak sped back, hovering level with the left door as she set her claws into the hatch.
Watch out! Door open, fall on mouse!
The young mouse backed away as the sparrow released the door. It banged down hard, flapping on its hinges. This time Matthias was aware that there would be another shower of falling dust when the door opened downwards. Wisely, he had edged sufficiently along the ridge to avoid both. With Warbeak flying behind him as a backup in case he fell, Matthias used the open door as a ladder. He was soon up through the opening. Though the inside was dull and gloomy, he could see they were in a long, trench-like defile, one side of which was a fairly straight wall, while the other side was a high, curving slope, the reverse side of the arched wooden ceiling. Matthias called Warbeak to him. He undid the collar and lead from the sparrow's neck and packed them away in the haversack. He patted his flying friend.
Warbeak, I can no longer keep you collared. You are a free sparrow and a very good friend.
The young sparrow blinked her fierce little eyes.
Matthias, my mouse friend, I no leave, stay with you.
Together they spent several minutes searching the high ceiling above. Warbeak, having the advantage of flight, was first to find the final trapdoor that they had guessed must exist. It was not a hard climb for Matthias, merely an excited and rather undignified scramble up the curving wooden roof back. This time they found that the door opened inwards. It was really heavy. The two companions strained together until it creaked loudly and opened. Matthias scrambled through, followed by Warbeak. They found themselves completely surrounded by sparrows as the door slammed shut behind them. The birds argued and chattered aloud as they sprang upon Matthias, pinning him to the lid of the door with many claws. He was unable to move a single whisker. As quickly as it had started, the noise ceased. The flock of birds parted. Matthias found himself staring straight into the bold, aggressive face of a big, strong-looking male sparrow. The bird glared at him with a crazy light in its bright, mad eyes.
Mouse worm, you my prisoner. This court of sparrow. Me, King Bull Sparrow.
Chapter 15. The bodies of Sella and Chicken Hound, the two traitor foxes, lay limp in the ditch that ran alongside the road. The rats of Cluny's horde had executed them with spears and tossed them there. Sella lay still, her once bright cunning eyes glazed over in death. But gradually, Chicken Hound began to twitch and groan. He was still alive. The fox's entire body was afire with pain. Twice they had stabbed him. once in the back of the leg, and again right through the loose skin and fur at the scruff of his neck. Chicken Hound had screamed and fallen into the ditch, helped by the feet of the rat executioners. He had immediately blacked out. Sella's carcass landed on top of her son's body in the shallow, muddy water. The rats were satisfied that both foxes were dead. And if they were not, well, who was going to climb down through all of those stinging nettles into the slippery ooze to find out? They hurled clods of earth at the prone forms in the ditch and stood watching them for a time. When flies began to gather on the foxes, the rodents lost interest and wandered off. Chicken Hound regained his senses. He lay quite still with Sella's body draped across him. When he was satisfied that the coast was clear, he struggled painfully clear of the grisly carcass that once had been his mother. Old fool. She would never have been in this mess if she'd let a much younger and smarter fox handle things. With a total lack of sorrow for his deceased parent, Chicken Hound began figuring out his next move. He would have to lie low in this stinking ditch until darkness fell. Even though he was severely hurt, the irony of the situation caused the young fox a silent snigger. It was he, not his mother, who had outwitted Clooney. Now he would soon be free with the revised plans of the attack upon Redwall Abbey. Surely that would be worth something. As soon as it was dark, Chicken Hound made his move. He was only too glad to do so. Flies, wasps, worms, and all manner of crawlers had been thoroughly investigating him all afternoon. Slowly and carefully, he rolled about in the thick mud until it formed a poultice, cooling the wounds in his leg and neck, preventing further blood loss. Under the cover of night, he wobbled unsteadily to his feet, limping away up the bed of the ditch towards Redwall. The going was painfully slow, but Chicken Hound consoled himself on the long journey by boosting his own ego. Maybe a silly bunch of rats could put one over Sella. Huh, she was old, and had lost a lot of her guile, not like me. They hadn't reckoned with a smart, intelligent young fox like I am. I'll show them. Revenge will be mine. They'll see what it's like to be up against an expert in espionage. Hours later, within sight of the abbey walls, Chicken Hound discovered a slope that was not too steep and started to pull himself up out of the ditch. He gasped and cried out in agony as he climbed. Using some creepers and an overhanging bush, the young fox finally made it to the road. Completely exhausted, he lay in the dust. How long he had been dragging his wounded body along the ditch bed, he could not tell. In his present weakened condition, he could not go a step further, but fell into a state halfway between unconsciousness and sleep. Silent Sam was Cornflower's bodyguard on her nightly round of the ramparts. He marched solemnly by her side as she gave out mugs of hot soup to the grateful sentries that watched through the night hours. Ambrose Spike watched hungrily as she poured him a steaming mug of the delicious soup. The hedgehog thanked her profusely, hoping that there might be seconds after the others had been served. "What a thoughtful little body you are, Miss Cornflower. I always say there's nothing like some good homemade vegetable soup to keep the life in my old spines. It's a fair night, but mark you, it gets a bit chill twixt dark and dawn, me dear." While the hedgehog and the mouse were chatting, Silent Sam was never still for a second. He trotted about on the parapet, always sucking his paw, leaping from stone to stone, fighting off imaginary foes with his tiny dagger. At first, Cornflower thought he was play-acting as usual. The baby squirrel stood on top of the gatehouse threshold. Pointing down to the road with his knife, he beckoned Cornflower and Ambrose with his well-sucked paw to come and see something. The young field mouse wagged her ladle. "Put that dagger away and stop your climbing, you little scamp." Silent Sam remained as he was, like a well-trained pointer dog.
"Perhaps he's trying to tell us something, miss," grunted Ambrose.
He waddled over to the parapet and looked down to where Sam pointed.
"Well, bless me soul, Miss Cornflower, I do believe that our little soldier here has spotted an object. There's a creature a-laying down there. But I'm blowed if it's fish or fowl. There's so much mud and dust plastered on it," whispered the hedgehog. "You stay put, missy. I'll go and fetch help."
Cornflower and Silent Sam stood looking down from the parapet. Ambrose, aided by Jess Squirrel and Formole, ventured out into the road to investigate. At their back stood a dozen stout mice, guarding the gatehouse door under the command of Basil Staghare.
"Steady in the ranks there," said the hare quietly. "Keep your eyes peeled for signs of ambush, and no talking now."
Chickenhound was lugged inside as rapidly as possible. Unable to contain their curiosity, the defenders questioned the limp, half-awake fox as they carried him across the abbey grounds.
"Did your friends, the rats, do this? I suppose it's sanctuary you want now. How worry you be about a-layin' in yon road?"
Chickenhound's head flopped from side to side as he was borne along. He would only say one thing.
"The abbot. I must see the abbot. Keep that badger away from me or you'll learn nothing."
Basil dismissed the rearguard and caught up with Ambrose.
"I say, you'd best get that rascal straight to the jolly old abbot. Let him make his statement before he pegs out, don't you know?"
Chickenhound was hauled into the abbey building and laid out on a bench. Abbot Mortimer shuffled up in his nightshirt, rubbing sleep from his eyes. He inspected the fox's wounds with a critical, practiced look and spoke dispassionately.
"Well, fox, what do you want from us? No doubt, Clooney, your master has sent you here to spy."
Chickenhound shook his head in weak denial.
"Please, I must have some water."
Jess Squirrel picked up the water jug, but withheld it.
"Tell the Father Abbot what you want, sly one,"
she rasped sternly. The fox reached out feebly for the water jug. Much to the abbot's dismay, Jess still held it at a distance.
"Speak first. You'll get water when we get information," she insisted.
The sight of an injured animal distressed the abbot, but he decided wisely to leave matters to Jess. The squirrel knew what she was doing.
"Clooney's horde did this to me," croaked the fox. "My mother, Sella, they killed her. I know of Clooney's new plans. Care for me, and I will tell you all."
Chickenhound fainted clean away.
"Ha! I certainly wouldn't waste good time and medicine on this one," said Jess coldly.
Ambrose Spike scratched his stomach speculatively.
"True, Jess, neither would I. But mayhap he has vital information. Otherwise, why would he drag himself here in this state?"
The abbot inspected the fox's neck wound beneath the mudded fur.
"What Ambrose says makes sense. Would you lift the wretched creature up and carry him to the sick bay, please?"
Cornflower and Silent Sam watched the fox being carried away. Sam stood in front of her, his dagger drawn to protect them both. She ruffled his pointed ears.
"It's all right now, Sam," she said gently. "The fox cannot hurt us. Thank you for protecting me."
The little squirrel sheathed his knife and resumed paw-sucking. Winifred and Abbot Mortimer sat by the bed in the sick bay. They kept up their vigil until Chickenhound regained consciousness. The fox whimpered. He gazed around at the homely little room.
"Oh, my neck! What is this place? Where am I?"
he groaned. Winifred pushed the patient gently back onto the pillows and held a bowl of water to the cracked, dry lips.
"Please drink this and lie still," she ordered.
Chickenhound slurped and gulped greedily at the water as the abbot enlightened him.
"You are in the infirmary at Redwall Abbey,"
As yet I do not know the full extent of your injuries. When you have rested, my friends will cleanse you and dress your wounds. Chicken Hound could hardly believe his ears.
You mean I can stay? But I haven't told you of the new plans yet.
The abbot wiped driblets of water from his patient's chin.
Listen to me, my son. We would not turn you away from our gates unless you were an enemy that meant us harm. All creatures are cared for at Redwall Abbey, and it is my task to care for the sick and injured. You are my responsibility. Whether or not you choose to give information is a matter that your own heart must deal with. Meanwhile, you will receive our hospitality and sanctuary until you are fully recovered.
Chicken Hound lay thinking about what the kindly old mouse had said. Suddenly he blurted out,
"The battering ram is only a decoy. Cluny means to use it as a diversion so that he can tunnel underneath your abbey walls. I don't know exactly where he plans to start digging, but I do know that he will come at you from under the ground."
The abbot shook his head reprovingly as Winifred lowered the lamp flame and drew the curtains.
"Cluny is surely the spawn of darkness. He will stop at nothing, my son. Now I realize this, and I believe what you tell me is true. But why did you crawl all the way to Redwall with this information, almost at the cost of your life?"
Chicken Hound did his best to look sorrowful and outraged as he lied.
"Because they killed old Seller, sir. She was my mother. I will not rest until justice is done to her murderers."
The abbot patted the young fox's paw.
"Thank you for entrusting your confidence in us, young one. Close your eyes now and try to get some rest."
When the abbot had departed, Chicken Hound snuggled his filthy body down against the clean white sheets. He felt a little better already. Well enough to have a quiet snigger. There was no fool like an old fool. This mouse was as stupid as Seller had been. Let the mice fight the rats, and the rats fight the mice. What did he care? Redwall must be a veritable treasure house to a clever young fox. Chapter 16. Dunwing was the widowed mother of Warbeak. She was also sister to the mighty King Bull Sparrow. When her daughter was shot down by the arrow, she had given her up as dead. Now that she was back safe and sound, she stroked and scolded her at the same time with relief. When she could get a chirp in edgeways, Warbeak related the strange story to her mother in the rapid sparrow dialect. As she was doing this, Matthias lay pinned to the floor by the claws of many fierce sparrow warriors. As far as he could tell, the place was one enormous loft. This was the court of King Bull Sparrow, whose wrath seemed about to descend upon him. The sparrows lived higgledy-piggledy here in one great untidy tribe. The roof above met in the shape of an upturned V, thus making the court a long triangular structure. Under the eaves at either edge were countless scruffy-looking nests, all of which appeared to be filled to overflowing with shrieking baby sparrows. At one end, the loft was blocked off by roofing slates and old nesting materials. This was the king's own private chamber. Matthias estimated that it was probably underneath where the weather vane was situated. King Bull Sparrow was not a bird to be trifled with. He noticed the young mouse's evident interest in his surroundings and quickly diverted his attention with a savage kick at the helpless figure.
"What mouseworm wanting court a king?" he snapped.
Matthias, realizing that this was no time for idle chit-chat, promptly shouted out in a loud, courtly manner,
"O king, I come to return one of your brave young warriors."
The statement caused an immediate hullabaloo. Bull Sparrow flapped his wings once and quiet descended. He cocked his head to one side, assessing this bold young intruder.
"You lie, Mouseworm! Not help Sparrer, mouse enemy!" he shrieked. "King Ball Sparrer say killy enemy, kikilleet!"
Instantly Matthias found himself fighting for his life. The Sparrer soldiers piled in on him, jabbering, clawing and pecking. He managed to get a paw free and struck out left and right, dealing hefty blows to several of the sparrows. Matthias realized that he would soon be overwhelmed as more sparrows pressed in on him, urged on by the mad exhortations of their king.
"Kikilleet! Kikilleet! Make Mouser dead, kikilleet!"
As Matthias battled to free his other paw, he felt himself enveloped by two pairs of wings. Warbeak and Dunwing were attempting to shelter him. The mother sparrow was crying out,
"No, Killy! Mouse good! Save my egg sparrow!"
The king was not convinced.
"Mouse enemy! Gotta make dead!"
King Bull Sparrow had no fledglings of his own. Warbeak, who was his favorite niece, called out to her uncle, appealing for mercy.
"No, no, King Bull, not Killy Matthias Mouse! Him save Warbeak, give Sparrow word to Mouse that you know Killy!"
The king sprang in among his warriors, scattering them like chaff. They cowered before him as he shouted out a new edict.
"Fool worms, stop! King say no, Killy Mouse! We have Sparrow word of my sister's egg-chick!"
The Sparrow warriors backed off. Matthias picked himself up. Luckily, he had not come to much harm. He dusted his habit off.
"Phew! Thank you once again, Warbeak, my friend. I owe you my life."
The king issued orders to two sparrow warriors.
"Battlehawk, Windplume, get a bag. Find out what Mouse carry."
Matthias stood firm as the haversack was pulled from his back. The two warriors could not figure out how to open it. They tore at the material with beak and claw until it gave way. The contents scattered upon the floor. Matthias stood respectfully to one side as the king rummaged through his meager possessions. King Bull Sparrow drank some water from the canteen. He spat it out.
"No worms, only mouse food," he commented.
Warbeak sighed wistfully. She looked longingly on as her uncle found the package of candied chestnuts and ripped it open. Bull Sparrow dubiously sampled one. His face lit up with pleasure.
"This good food for Sparrow King. Not good for Mouseworm. Me keep."
He tucked the candied chestnuts under his wing, then picked up the collar and lead and beckoned to Matthias.
"Mouseworm, come here. You lucky king let her live."
The young mouse approached the sparrow with trepidation, not wanting to antagonize the moody, dangerous bird. The sparrow king buckled the collar tightly about Matthias's neck. Scarcely leaving him room to breathe, he attached the lead and laughed aloud. Dutifully, the other sparrows laughed with him. Matthias felt his blood boil. He tried to contain his rising temper. The court of the Sparrow King was no place to have tantrums. Mentally, he promised himself that he would never again use a collar on any living creature. The indignity was unspeakable. Bull Sparrow handed the lead to Warbeak. Turning to his subjects, he chuckled insanely and pointed at Matthias.
"King Bull Sparrow, spare mouse. How you like him for pet, my niece? Mouse, you obey my sister and her egg chick. Funny, huh?"
All the sparrows laughed loud and long, vying with each other to show the most merriment. The king was a completely unpredictable tyrant. When he made a joke, it was always funny. Warbeak gave the lead a tug,
and whispered to her friend.
Matthias, you see Warbeak and Mother not make laugh. Sorry.
The young captive winked at his warder. He was beginning to hatch a plan.
Don't worry, my friend. At least